Welcome to Local Talk here on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in central Iowa. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host for this hour. Thank you for listening in on this beautiful morning. Today should see partly sunny skies with a high near 87, and skies should be clearing up by Tuesday night and will continue to do so through Saturday. So today might see a chance of rain and thunderstorms. From Wednesday or Tuesday night on, we should see sunny skies for the rest of the week all the way into the weekend. Wednesday should be a bit cooler with temperatures in the high 70s, but the rest of the week should see days in the 80s and nights in the 60s. Looks like on Saturday the temperatures might go all the way up to almost 90 degrees. So it should be a beautiful week and hopefully a little bit of precipitation today. Okay, here's Mr. Dennis Hart with a roundup of the Iowa news.
The coronavirus continues its rampage through Iowa. Former President Trump will soon come back to the Hawkeye State, and that Iowa State University football game against the University of Iowa all made big news around the state last week. First, the coronavirus. The State Department of Public Health reported that 30 more people had died from the virus last week. That brought the total number of deaths from the virus to 6,337 in Iowa since the pandemic started. There were also more than 8,000 new confirmed cases of the virus in the state, bringing the total number of cases of the virus to nearly 451,000 since the start of the pandemic. And nearly 30% of those cases in the past week have been among people 17 years old or younger, the largest percentage of any age group. The state's 14-day positivity rate went up to 8.9% from 8.7% last Monday. There was also word that 578 Iowans were hospitalized with the virus, and of those in the hospital with it, 79% were not fully vaccinated. 88% of those in intensive care were not fully vaccinated. And there were 20 long-term care facilities reporting coronavirus outbreaks last week. There was also word that the pandemic was putting stress on Iowa school nurses. They were hoping to catch a break this fall after what they went through trying to keep kids safe from the coronavirus in the past 2 years. But this was not to be the case, as the Delta variant of the virus has fueled a new wave of infection. All this as President Biden announced that federal agencies and businesses with more than 100 workers would be required to either have their workers vaccinated or tested for the coronavirus weekly. The president's plans also include vaccine requirements for health care providers that receive Medicare and Medicaid funding. As you would expect, Iowa politicians responded to the plans along partisan lines, Republicans opposing them, Democrats supporting them. Among the Republicans who said they opposed the president's proposals, Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds, who said what the president was proposing was, in her words, dangerous and unprecedented steps to insert the federal government even further into our lives while dismissing the ability of Iowans and Americans to make health care decisions for themselves. Iowa Democrats said Republicans were to blame for the surging coronavirus cases in the state. Meanwhile, a Polk County judge declined to temporarily block an Iowa law banning local mask mandates. The judge decided against issuing a temporary injunction last Friday afternoon in response to a request from Frances Parr, a Council Bluffs mother who is suing the state and Governor Reynolds to permanently block the law. Another request to temporarily block the law is still pending on a separate federal lawsuit, and a decision could come soon. That other lawsuit was filed by parents of Iowa students with disabilities. Also last week, the Des Moines Register reported that partisan divides over such issues as lockdowns, mask mandates, and vaccine requirements during the pandemic have intensified the debate as Iowa officials try to decide who should have the power to make decisions about the coronavirus response. This as Iowa's coronavirus cases surge and the school year begins. Some localities are looking for loopholes to perform their own mitigation steps like mask mandates despite the statewide laws. Meanwhile, last week, Governor Reynolds announced Iowa is allocating $100 million of its federal coronavirus relief funding to address a housing shortage in the state. That money, plus $230 million the Iowa legislature has allocated over 5 years to Iowa's tax credit programs, will make it possible for developers to build more than 36,000 new housing units. A recent Iowa Finance Authority study found the state needs 47,000 new homes in the next decade to accommodate population growth. In other news last week, word that Wells Fargo would pay $250 million after regulators accused the bank of failing to properly oversee home mortgages, which are handled by a Des Moines-based company division. In addition to paying the fine, Wells Fargo agreed to temporarily stop servicing other lenders' mortgages. Wells Fargo issues more mortgages than any other bank in the nation. In the world of politics last week, word that former President Trump would hold a rally at the Iowa State Fairgrounds on October 9th. The rally will take place at 7 o'clock on that Saturday night. Trump easily won Iowa in the 2016 and 2020 presidential elections. His leadership PAC has hired two Iowa political consultants as senior advisors. Meanwhile, Iowa State Representative Wes Breckinridge resigned from the state house this past Friday after he took a job at the Iowa Law Enforcement Academy. The Democrat from Newton said it would be too much to balance serving in the House while working as the Academy's assistant director. Breckinridge's resignation from House District 29 will trigger a special election and give Republicans a chance to pick up what's considered a competitive seat and expand their majority in the state House. Republicans now hold a 59-41 advantage in the House. There was also word that a sweeping change of Iowa's election law would get one of its first major tests this fall when Iowans vote in city and school elections. The new law went into effect in March. It shorted Iowa's early voting period, put into place new rules about returning absentee ballots, and limited county auditors' control over some parts of the election process. Republicans said the new laws were needed to ensure the integrity of Iowa elections, while Democrats said they think the law will suppress votes. The legislation faces a lawsuit brought by the League of United Latin American Citizens of Iowa. The case is scheduled to go on trial next March. Early voting this year in Iowa will begin 20 days before Election Day. That means Iowans can vote in the November 2nd city and school elections starting October 13th. Iowans who want to vote by mail can request an absentee ballot now, but county auditors will not mail them out until October 13th. And those voting by mail must have their ballots arrive at the county auditor's office by the time polls close in order to be counted. And if you want to vote by mail, you must ask your county auditor to send you an absentee ballot request form. In other news last week, an employee died in an accident at the Prestige Food Pork Production Plant in Eagle Grove. 57-year-old Jeffrey Leonard was a mechanic and had been with Prestige since the plant opened in 2019. There was also word that a 33-year-old man from Whittemore died last week at a Mason City hospital after he was overcome by fumes at an open manure pit at a hog facility south of Algona. Randy Dean Meyer was an area farmer and manure applicator who was getting ready to transport the contents of a lagoon to cropland. There was also word that a Central Iowa teacher had resigned after being placed on leave following complaints about a personality survey sent to students. Lucas Kaufman, a teacher at Winterset Junior High, had been placed on leave last month after the survey was sent home to families. There was no word on what that survey may have contained. More than 100 students had walked out of class last week to support Kaufman, amidst speculation that his suspension was tied to a presentation to his class that featured the LGBTQ pride flag. Also last week, word that Adventureland in Altoona would add 9 new attractions and take away 3 others. The ones being removed are Falling Star, Lighthouse, and Lady Luck. The new rides include the Warhawks, Bernie's Swing, the Revolution, Leapfrogs, Circus Balloons, the Clipper, Speedway Racer, and Rockin' Rainbow. And the Des Moines Renaissance Fair will move to the southeast corner of the park next year. Meanwhile, the future of the Raging River at Adventureland, on which an 11-year-old boy died this past summer, is still undergoing review. In the wild world of college football around these parts last week, you might have heard that a game was played this past Saturday between Iowa State University and the University of Iowa in Ames. After all, it did generate some attention around here, lots of it. And you also might have heard the outcome. Iowa defeated ISU 27-17. It was the 6th time in a row Iowa has defeated the Cyclones. And there was also word that the Big 12 Conference, which Iowa State is part of, had invited 4 teams to join it. Those teams were Brigham Young University, the University of Central Florida, Cincinnati, and Houston. This after Oklahoma and Texas had announced they're leaving the Big 12. Stay tuned. And then there's the weather, or at least predictions about the weather. No, we're not talking about what Channel 8's weather people say about what's coming up. We're talking about what those beacons of weather accuracy say, the Farmer's Almanac and the Old Farmer's Almanac. Their predictions for the upcoming winter in Iowa came out last week. The Old Farmer's Almanac, which was first published way back in 1792, when George Washington was president, predicted that this winter could be one of the longest and coldest we've seen in years. Punctuated, it says, by, in its words, positively bone-chilling, below-average temperatures across most of the U.S. The Old Farmer's Almanac says its predictions are right about 80% of the time. Now, the Farmer's Almanac, a separate publication that only goes back to 1818, says we should expect Iowa weather to be mild at first, then cold and snowy. It says we can expect a blast of what it calls Arctic frigidity at the end of the year, frigidity that could bring temperatures to as low as 20 degrees below zero. As the Farmer's Almanac editor says, numbs the word for Iowa. Rather than think about any of this, I think I'll just turn on the TV and see what the weather's going to be tomorrow. And that is your summary of the week's news from all around Iowa. I'm Dennis Hart, chilling out for now, but planning to come right back here to KHOI tonight at 7 for Capital Week. Laura Bellin and I will talk about the latest in politics, Iowa style. Then I'll come back to Local Talk on Friday, when I'll report on what's been going on in Ames. Between now and then, have a great week.
So hot in the sky today, and you know I can see summertime slipping on away, slipping on, on. A few more geeks gone, a few more leaves turning red, but the grass is as soft as a feather in a feather bed. Oh, darling. So I'll be king and you be queen. Our kingdom's gonna be this little patch of green. Won't you lie down with me right now in this September grass? Won't you lie down September grass, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, the memory is like the sweetest pain. Yeah, I kissed a girl at a football game. I still smell the sweat and the grass stain. Walked home together, but I was never the same. Yeah. But that was a long time ago. Where is she now? Oh, I don't know. Won't you lie down with me now, now, in this September grass? Won't you lie down with me? September grass is the sweetest kind. It goes down easy like apple wine. Hope you don't mind if I pour you some. Be that much sweeter by the winter to come. Do you see those ants dancing on a blade of grass? But I know that's you and me, baby. Yes, it is. We're so small and the world so vast. We found each other down in the grass. Won't you lie down with me right here? September grass. Won't you lie down in September grass? Oh, darling, lie down, 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 in September. Lie down. uptown gal. Oh, now you fly now, fly now, you fly now. Oh, whatever, whatever, you got to lie down. Oh, lie down. Yeah, darling.
And this is Local Talk. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host until 8 a.m. Fall is here, and with it, the time for various elections begins. It's early, but it is starting. People are announcing their candidacies. And one of those on November 2nd will be for the seat of city council person representing District 3 in Ames. Currently, the seat is held by council member David Martin, who is leaving Ames for, I think, South Dakota, North Dakota, somewhere, one of the Dakotas. And will no longer be holding this seat. And Anita Rollins, welcome to Local Talk. You've announced your candidacy to fill that seat.
Yes, I have. Thank you very much. I appreciate being able to be here.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for coming. You're kicking off the election season discussion.
Yes, I am.
So let's start with this. We'll be talking to other candidates, you know, throughout the period up until November 2nd. And, you know, I appreciate you coming and starting this conversation. There's a number of people running for city council in various districts.
Yes.
I think there's three or four candidates have announced so far.
I believe that's right.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about District 3. Yes. First of all, please tell us, where is District 3? Because it's really hard district to wrap your brain around. It's not a nice square, right?
It is not a nice square. I tell people it makes a little bit of a C. It goes primarily, it's the west and then sort of southern part of Ames. Primarily, it's going to be Old Edwards. It does have a little finger that goes towards campus as far as Highland. But then as it's north, it misses areas like Reliable Street. It does pick up the rest of North Ames where Maryland and those streets are. It swings down south, mostly west of North Dakota. But then it also swings as far south as Airport Road. And
wow,
some of that new development down that way. So yeah. it sort of makes a bit of a C on the west side of Ames. So, yes.
It kind of takes a stroll around West Ames.
Yes, it does.
Does it include the area where the middle school is, like up on Mortensen Road?
It misses some of that. And so it does. It gets some of Tripp Street and that area. And so it does encompass some of that as well.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah, actually.
So it's West Ames.
It's West Ames.
In various parts of it.
In various parts of it.
And kind of tends towards the periphery.
Yes.
But
absolutely.
Then also it kind of includes does it include the Oakland area, like on the other side of the ravine of the green space?
It doesn't include north of that. Oakland Street itself is included, not north of Oakland. It's an interesting little
So do you pocket. Feel, so first question is, do you feel confident that if you got the seat that you would know who your constituents are?
Well, I really hope to. And that is one of the things that I want to use this election season for, this campaign season. One of the things that we have coming up this Saturday is an event at Daly Park. And my hope is that people will hear about that. And if they are wondering, who is this person, that they will come out. But I also hope during campaigning to really get out there and meet the people on Oakland as well as the other streets in the city.
You're planning to walk the district?
Yes, mm-hmm. I am. Mm-hmm. I am.
Well, that should be interesting. It's kind of an interesting collection of people because it's a little bit of a cross-section of, I mean, West Ames is, you know, a weird combination of students and you know, faculty and then other people,
absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
And because of the shape of this district, you're kind of sampling a lot of different types of people. It's interesting.
Absolutely. Which I really enjoy. Even where I live on Woodland Street, that's a microcosm of that.
Yeah.
At the end of my street, there would be apartment complex, some duplexes, but then we also, on the other side of the street, have homes that are, you know, $1 million
yeah,
sales.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
It's a real mix, and I really love that.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about what issues are you running on? What are your issues of focus?
Sure, sure. Well, Ames is a really good place to live, but part of that is recognizing that even good places have opportunities for growth and for improvement and for inclusion. So for me, one of those issues is making sure that we are bringing everyone that we can to the table to make sure that everyone is having the best experience that they can have in Ames. I also want to look for ways to make sure that those who want to live in Ames, there are a number of people who work in Ames that, for whatever reason, currently can't find housing here. And so thinking about how we can make sure that there is affordable housing in Ames, but then also transportation issues that even though, again, we have a great city units that are looking at housing and are looking at transportation and are doing really good work, but we want to continue to look and find ways, creative ways, maybe to solve some of those issues and make sure that everyone has the ability to benefit from what Ames has to offer.
So what I heard was transportation, housing.
And then more thinking inclusively, perhaps bringing in more voices. One of the things that I really value is thinking about who's at the table and who's not. And then sometimes not everyone can get to the table. Life prevents them based on whatever life issues they're facing at that time. But how do we still make sure that those voices are represented in some ways, whether that's through data or other means, so that we are making decisions that have the most benefit for all of our citizens? So thinking about also the unintended consequences of our decisions, who might not benefit, and at least being aware of that as part of the decision-making process. And so that third issue is really about thinking inclusively.
And how do you see that actually being implemented in reality? When you say at the table,
mm-hmm.
what is the table? Are you talking about what form does that actually take?
Right. I am thinking about with our policy making as a city council, that might be in terms of budgetary decisions, thinking about where might we shift funds if that's an opportunity, where might we go after additional resources, or where might we just, as a result of our policy decisions, want to have a more discussion to make sure that we are thinking about and listening to as many voices as we can get.
Mm-hmm. So do I understand you correctly in saying that you feel that you have an understanding of people that might be overlooked, that you could represent them during these policy decisions?
What I would say is that I want to do that, and it's not that others haven't or don't, but I hope that I bring a lens that's aware that many times in our decision making, we think we know what's best, and that awareness hopefully will cause me to pause and just have that moment of reflection and say, gosh, I wonder what other populations may think or other individuals may think, and then be able to bring that type of lens to the process. I wouldn't mm-hmm. pretend that I really know what everyone in a particular right. population may think about something.
But it's an orientation or an approach
right.
that you're taking when you make decisions.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Thank you.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, tell us your experience. You've had a little bit of experience in public service, right?
I have. I've been in Ames now 31 years, and during that time, tried to be active in the community. That's really important to me. I believe that all of us have a role to play in making sure that our communities serve us well and serve all of our members well. So yes, I guess the largest one, or the one that might be most noteworthy, would be that I did serve on the Ames School Board, and that was some time ago, back in 2006. But yes, I do have that experience. It was a really good one. I care a great deal about what happens in our education system. But I've also come to realize that it is all of these components work together. Education is looking at the students themselves, but families also exist in our community. And what happens with our families impacts our students. So there's this nice little circle that also those families have to live and work here. So that means our corporations and businesses, all of those play a role. And so this is an opportunity maybe to make a slight shift, but still to be able, I hope, to add something mm-hmm. to Ames.
Now, you've also worked in other areas besides the school board, right?
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. So
what other experiences are you coming from?
So I am the secretary for the NAACP locally mm-hmm. and have been active in that organization for a number of years. I volunteered regularly with the school district when my children were in school. I am also currently the treasurer for All Aboard for Kids, which is a program for children with autism. And that has been a really exciting opportunity as mm-hmm. well.
Are you an Ames native?
I am not. I am originally from Des Moines. Mm-hmm. My dad was a postal worker. My mom was a teacher's aide. I grew up there, went out of state to college, and then got married. Our family lived all around the Midwest, and then had the opportunity to come to Ames. And I will have to say, when I first left Iowa, I thought I would not live here again. It just didn't appear to be a place with opportunities. But I have to admit that Ames surprised me, and it has been a very good place for myself and for my family.
Mm-hmm. Did you come back associated with the university?
I did not, but my mm-hmm. former husband did. Mm-hmm. And then I later did start working for the university, first in a communications area and then in an education program, mm-hmm. which I retired from. Yeah.
Okay. So the other thing, when I was looking at your website, you kind of made a point of talking about values.
Yes.
And you've kind of touched on that a little bit already, mm-hmm. but tell us a little bit about why you put that in there and what the values are that you're really looking at.
So I hope that those values are seen as a little explanation of how I'll think about decision making and approaching whatever challenges that the city faces. I did talk a little bit about communication. And what I mean by that is listening to understand, but also then after you've received that input, then being able to communicate out what it is that your position is and why you've come to that particular decision. The second one would be creativity. Again, Ames is a really great place and with lots of opportunities. And I do think, though, like every city, it has some challenges. And it's not that people haven't cared or haven't thought deeply about these things, but bringing in, perhaps, thinking outside the box in some ways can be really helpful, and I like to do that. I like to think about, well, who haven't we talked to, or what are they doing over here, or how can we mix up the pieces in a little bit different way, and would that increase our ability to have a better outcome? So that is one of the pieces. And then collaboration, again, I know I touched on this a little bit, but because all of the pieces of the city, whether you are a business or the school district or just a resident in the city, there's synergy there. And we will all only benefit as those individual components are doing well. So thinking that way, I think that we can find, when you think about the little Venn diagram, find those areas where we all have an interest, which, again, I'm not saying that the city doesn't already do this, but continuing to think that way so that everyone has the most benefit, looking for those areas where collaboratively we can increase our impact.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you. You know, when you were talking earlier about your past experiences, can you for yourself identify like what you think has prepared you most? Like what you've done in your past experience that really kind of gives you the foundation to be a city council member?
Mm-hmm. Well, I do think that as a result of those past experiences, a lot of what city council does has to do with budgets, policies, as well as work around those creative kind of collaborations. And I would say that I've had all of those kinds of experiences, mm-hmm. budgetary, not only with my work that I had at Iowa State, but then also as a member of the school board policy. I was on the policy committee at that time for 3 years. It wasn't a four-year term at that time, but all 3 years as part of my time on the school board. And then collaborations, that was really key in the work that I had at Iowa State. We had a number of corporate partners, and so that continual stewarding of those gifts and finding people that resonated with our message so that we could make sure that we were continuing to have a real win-win in our relationships, a win for the students and families that we served, as well as for the corporations that we were working with. And so
you've worked on that. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, thank you. And you're talking about all of this. This doesn't come off as an election in opposition strongly to anything, either to what David did or mm-hmm. even, I mean, there is no opposition right now, as I understand.
Right,
there might still be, but mm-hmm. you're not running in opposition to what David was. But you are talking about adding more to.
Yes.
In a way. As somebody who's worked in a lot of different of the pivotal parts of this community, the school board, mm-hmm. the university, NAACP, tell me a little bit about just your vision is for Ames as a community, mm-hmm. as a whole. What is that vision that you carry?
I do think it's a vision that more people would benefit from what's here, as well as seeing that there are more opportunities within the city. I know, for instance, that, again, I'll just pick one of the topics, which is housing, that there are a number of people that would like to perhaps live in Ames, but, you know, an entrenched problem of the city, and I know people continue to chip away at this, is that there isn't affordable housing, and that means different things for different people. But thinking about how we can perhaps through a different mix, creativity, collaboration, continue to chip away at that or even get some type of a breakthrough for that particular issue. But I also think that the city has a number of great things that are already going on that we just need to make sure that in our thinking and our planning that we are perhaps looking at other ways to get messages out to ensure that those who would benefit most have those opportunities or at least are aware of them so that they can choose whether they want to take advantage of that opportunity or not. So, yeah, I'm thinking more inclusion so that more people can benefit from the good things that are going on here.
Mm-hmm. You also use the word opportunity a lot. So you're mm-hmm. also thinking in terms of opportunity, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you. I'm speaking with Anita Rollins, who's running for District 3 for the Ames City Council. And we're kind of kicking off the early season for voting. And Anita, last words.
Well, I thank you for this opportunity so much. If folks are available, we will be having our campaign launch this Saturday at Daly Park from 4 to 6 p.m. There'll be some giveaways, live music. And so if you're interested and would like to know more, I'll be at the park and would love to meet
and,
you.
And where is Daly Park?
It is in West Ames off of Wilder Boulevard, 340 Wilder Boulevard.
Okay. And your website, if people want information.
Yes. So I'm at Rollins for Council, all lowercase, all one word, RollinsForCouncil.com. So love to have you check us out.
Okay. Thank you so much. We've been speaking with Anita Rollins, running for Ames City Council, District 3. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host for the hour, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for listening in. Keith Morgan, Story County Emergency Coordinator, thank you for joining us for your monthly check-in. It is Preparedness Month, right?
It is. It's kind of hard to think of preparedness on what we call blue sky days like it is out there right now.
Yeah. Well, as we all know, trouble comes fast up there in the sky.
Yes, it does. And that's why we've got to be prepared now. You always see those images of when the hurricane's coming and the people who waited to get prepared are going to the store and finding the shelves all cleared out and stuff like that. So,
your mission in life is to prevent that scenario, right?
It is. First off, we try and make it so that we don't have as much risk, but you know we can't get rid of all of that. So second thing is we all need to work together to be prepared for those things that do slip through our risk shields that we have out there.
Yeah. Okay, well, so we're going to talk about the preparedness kit, which is not a new topic, but it's just one of those things that you probably have to talk about 50 times before you actually do it, right?
Oh, exactly. And also, for those folks that we've actually gotten through, this is just a reminder we'll finish up with on the preparedness kit that once you build it, things do expire and that you've got to take care of your preparedness kit.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
If with your indulgence, I'll go ahead and we'll
please
review
do
some of the stuff.
It's important stuff. Let's do it.
Right at the top of the list, food and water. Water for 72 hours, which we calculate that at 1 gallon per person per day. So one person would need three days supply, so they'd need 3 gallons of water. So simple math there for folks to do, but that's another one of those items that you probably need to circulate out here in the month of September to make sure. And also that food that you got down there, especially if you got a family, make it sort of a game and have, so you cycle your food out, take some of that food that you got in your preparedness kit, bring it up, turn off all the lights and just work by flashlight and cook up that food that you would have in there and eat it sometime in September so that you can get new food down there. Kids will think it's neat, and you're teaching them a lesson about preparedness. The next thing on there is all the time we see where people lose contact with what's going on because their cell phone goes dead.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I highly recommend getting a no-weather radio with either batteries, or mine is solar, so I just set it in the windowsill, and it stays charged. And even if that doesn't work, it's got a crank on it, so I can crank it up with enough power so I can keep connected with the outside world and see what's going on. So that's one of those top things. Those first two things I say are very, very important. Another great thing about that no weather radio that I've got, it's got a built-in flashlight. So I don't need to keep batteries down there for that one, even though I've got other flashlights. I can have something to light my way, or even go into dark areas should be helping out a neighbor whose house might have collapsed. So those are some of the major things there. But as we were saying, if you're not going to get a solar powered one, you're going to need to have batteries in there. And it's time to go down there, grab those batteries that you might have in your kit, take them out, bring them upstairs, use them in something else, and put fresh batteries down there. The one thing that does not wear out, though, is a whistle. It's not electric, but it's one of those things that can save your life by being able to signal to any rescuers that you might be trapped inside of your house if there's been damages to it. So those are the top things that we've got there. But, you know, one of the other things that people oftentimes forget is a can opener. Got great, you know, I've got all this wonderful food down there. And then I figure out I can't open it up. So the batteries don't run out on that, but make sure you have something like that down there.
Wow, devil's in the details, right?
It is. And that's why I say practice. Take that food out that you've got, cook up with it. And then you're going to go, well, this is all great, but I'm now reaching into the drawer to pull out a can opener. Maybe I need to put that back in the tub with everything else that we've got as we're going along. When you start switching over to our best friends, our pets that are out there, make sure that you got some food and water for them along the way so that they can be well taken care of. And there's other little things like a good first aid kit. Have some basic medicines, a little bit of Motrin, a little bit of acetaminophen, or aspirin that's in there so that if there are minor injuries that you can take care of yourself. Now, something that a lot of other people don't think about is having both laxatives and antidiarrheal medicines in there, because if the situation changes and you're there for a while and your diet gets a bit messed up, it can really affect you one way or another. One of the things that is, you got to have some bandages, and also something that if you learn how to use them, and it doesn't take much to learn how to use it, is a tourniquet. A tourniquet is a lifesaver no matter what, because one of the quickest ways that you can die is to bleed to death. So having a tourniquet and having an understanding of how to use it. They've got them now where a tourniquet is easily operated by one person.
So is a tourniquet something you can buy in a drugstore?
I'm not quite so sure about in our local drugstores. They're definitely available online. And what you'll see is they've got a little stick on them now. So if you can get it over the part that needs to be isolated, and they have Velcro so that one person can get it started, and then they can take that mm-hmm. stick, wrap it tight to go ahead and stop the bleeding that's there. And then it has a little area where you latch it on in. So mm-hmm. that, so along with pad, the bandages.
So the hardest part is spelling it so that you can order it online.
That's true.
T-O-U-R-N-I-Q-U-E-T, right?
And I didn't even get it spelled that well, but spell check and predictive typing works really, really well on that. So that's one of those things. And a good thing about those is if you remember you have it down there, and if something should happen in your house or near your house, you can save somebody else's life very, very quickly by using a tourniquet. So I really encourage people to buy them for themselves, to learn how to use them. It's another great thing to have in your car as you're driving around so that you can help somebody else out. But as we're moving on down through this, garbage bags and ties, maybe a 5-gallon bucket that you put all this stuff into, and that's going to be your toilet when the water stops running.
Okay.
But it is one of those things that people don't think about.
It's a thing, right? It's a reality.
It's very, very important.
Yeah.
Spare glasses, you know, if you lose your glasses, or especially those that wear contacts in an environment after a disaster, especially if there's dust in the air, you're not going to want to wear your contacts because high chance of getting an infection. Have those spare glasses, an old set that's maybe not as strong as they should be, that you were going to get rid of anyway, throw them on in there so you've got something to be able to continue to function after a disaster. So lots of things there. Games and puzzles for your kids. When mm-hmm. you're down there, we're at the trailing end. We're not completely through the severe weather season yet, but having something like that so that when you do have to go down into your basement during severe weather, you've got something for the kids to do to keep them occupied. So mm-hmm. those are the primary things about having your preparedness kit. Checking your preparedness kit, like I say, update those expired food, batteries, and stuff like that.
Okay.
Look at those things.
Yeah. So Keith, this was a great rundown. Obviously, this is not something you can all remember. Is there someplace on your website where there's a checklist that somebody could get so they could actually have a list of things?
Exactly. It's at www.storycountyiowa.gov. /EMA, Emergency Management Agency, EMA. Mm-hmm. Type that in there, take you to our website, and then we have a link very top on the left side that has multiple links for taking care of both just yourself or pets or people that are elderly or those that might have disabilities. So we hope to cover all that, and if that isn't good enough, give us a call at 515-382-7315, and we'll work with you to make sure that you're prepared.
So repeat the website and the phone number again.
It's www.storycountyiowa.gov/EMA, and our phone number is 515-382-7315.
Okay, thank you. Now, Keith, I know you also, you want to talk briefly about the mass notification, right?
Yeah, this is another thing that you've been hearing us talking about quite a bit. We've switched vendors that provide our mass notification system. And during Preparedness Week no matter what, we'd want to test that system. So today, at about 1 o'clock, we're going to go ahead and activate the mass notification system for everybody that has either got a landline or is registered with us for the Story County Iowa Alerts. And we're doing this for two purposes. First, hopefully anybody that's listening to us will be anticipating that. And if you don't get a notification, and if you think you've signed up for the system, then we'd like you to go back in, look at your profile, make sure that you've got the right thing set on it. If you think everything is set up properly in your profile and you didn't get an alert, go ahead and, again, that same phone number, give us a call, and we'll try and figure out what's up. It's very important that we test it. If you had already selected the severe weather notifications, that probably should have told you that you are hooked up with the system. But this is one specific time to check it out. The other thing is we're testing the system. We're seeing how fast this system can get these notifications out, because we get a report afterwards is how many people actually answered it, how many people got their text messages, all of that. There are 30,000 people have registered for this system. So it'll take a while. So it won't be right at 1 o'clock that everybody's going to get the notification. Might take a little bit longer. And that's part of what we're doing. Mm-hmm. Is to test that. And yeah. And what you're going to hear is test of the Iowa Story County Iowa Alerts Emergency Notification System. This mm-hmm. message confirms you are registered to receive alerts. Check your preparedness kit. Mm-hmm. Now, that's going to come from the phone number 382-7253. Again, 382-7253, or the text message will come from 77295. So,
or if you can't remember that, just remember that 382 is Nevada, essentially, and so
right.
That's where it's coming from, the 382 area code, or not area code, but
prefix.
Thank you. Never knew what that
yeah.
was called. So, if you haven't registered, what happens? What can you do to register?
Then again, go to our website, that same one at www.storycountyiowa.gov/EMA. And there's a link right there on that front page that will take you to the registration. So before 1 o'clock, get in there, get registered so that you can make sure. This is how we're going to keep you informed of potential emergencies within your communities to allow you to be a part of the solution, to help you help us make the situation better.
Well, thank you, Keith. If you register now, you'll get quick gratification of a notice sometime around 1 o'clock today. So it'll be a direct loop of communication with the Story County Emergency Services. So thank you. And again, that's Story County. Give the website one more time.
www.storycountyiowa.gov/EMA.
Okay. Now, Keith, before you go, I have to tell you something that I think that you'll enjoy hearing about. I went to Alaska recently and went to Skagway, which was kind of the city on the water that was the jumping off point for the gold rush to the Yukon.
Yep.
In the late 1890s. Okay, so what I learned was 100,000 people ended up trying to get to the Yukon. And the thing is, the Yukon is actually quite far away from the ocean, so you have to go over this really steep mountain range that's covered with snow. And then you have to take a boat down the Yukon River to, you know, what they thought were the gold fields. Now, as it turned out, of those 100,000 people that tried to get there, that only about between 30 and 40,000 people actually made it. And out of those, less than 20 actually found gold. So it was, you know, an exercise in madness. But what the part that you'll appreciate is that, you know, the Yukon is in Canada. And, you know, people were starting out in Alaska, which was the United States. And Canada had got this problem where it's all these people were rushing into the Yukon and were, once they got there, were starving because there was really nothing there, you know, to sustain life. And they got really upset about hundreds and thousands of, you know, people coming to starve in Canada. So they created like a border. They didn't have a set border, really, but they made the border the summit of the large mountain that was on the other side of Skagway, which people had to climb step by step. And at the border, they said, if you do not have a ton of survival supplies with you, you cannot enter Canada. So that was the requirement to enter Canada at the top of this mountain, was to have a ton of supplies. And this all had to be carried up on your back. So these people had to go up and down this mountain, you know, I don't know how many times, carrying all their supplies and then hoping that somehow at the top of the mountain nobody would steal them, because the Canadians wanted them to have a preparedness kit, right?
Yeah, I've seen the pictures of the folks going up the mountain.
You've seen that, right? The line of people with
the
things on their
back?
The line
going back and forth, yep, on there. Yeah, I don't think the public would allow us to require them, but when it comes down to it, you could either be uncomfortable after a disaster or you can be less uncomfortable.
And yeah.
We're just trying to work with you to give you those ideas on how to be less uncomfortable.
Well, I think the country of Canada decided the gold rush was in and of itself a disaster and people had to come prepared. So they were totally down with the preparedness kit concept. So anyway, a ton of supplies. That's a lot of supplies to carry up a mountain. Anyway, thank you so much, Keith, for the work you do and for coming on every month and telling us to have a preparedness kit. And, you know, eventually, if you say it enough, people will do it, right?
Yeah, they'll start working towards it.
Thank you so much. It's good to see you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Maybe September I'll love again. Maybe a rainbow will catch me then. This little boy lost will find his way once more, just like before, when lips were tender, the shade of a willow where love was born. A face on a pillow in early morn. I still see that golden world in all its maybe September love will come again.
I've been listening to Local Talk here on KHOI Community Radio. I've been your host for the hour. Thank you for being here. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, and Mike Murphy has been running the machines. Stay tuned for Democracy Now! At 8 a.m. and Headline News and Morning Masterpieces at 9 a.m. Be sure to tune in tonight at 7 p.m. for Capital Week with Laura Bellin and Dennis Hart. And remember that you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening to us, and we will see you again on the radio.